Trixie. After finally unloading the secret of her flight from Jumpstart, Tricia closeted herself from the office she shared with Glenn to make a few phone calls. It took her about an hour before she was finally directed to a number in New York where she was told she could reach the madam. Van Houten residence, whom may I ask is calling? The voice on the other end was male. Hi, my name is Patricia Michaels. I was wondering if Trixie would be available. I have some personal business I wish to discuss. One moment, please. Tricia heard muffled voices. The mouthpiece on the phone was definitely muted by the man on the other end. I'm sorry, but there is no one named Trixie living here. I'm afraid you have the wrong number. I'd really like to talk with someone named Frances Brown. She's in her mid to late 50s and may have come from southern Ohio. Tricia held her breath while listening to muffled voices on the other end of the line. Eventually, a woman's voice answered. Who is this and what do you want? My name is Patricia Michaels. I'm a freelance journalist working out of Magnolia, Ohio in Fuller County. I'm researching a story about the disappearance of Jim and Nadine Brown back in the fall of 1967. She rattled off her basic information quickly, hoping that the woman on the other end wouldn't hang up on her. And how would your story concern me? The voice barked. If you're Frances Brown, or once Frances Brown, this concerns your brothers and sisters. The woman on the other end stayed silent for just a few moments. Do you mind if I take this call on another phone? The woman asked. Tricia agreed. She was put on hold for a little less than 30 seconds when the phone was picked up again. What's your angle? The woman asked. My angle is to find the surviving children of the Brown family. There's a story in this, and I'd like to be able to tell it. I see, the other woman told her. And you think that I'm this person, this Frances Brown, you may be looking for? I know it's you, Frances. You're still talking with me. Tricia heard a soft chuckle emanating from the woman in New York. Yes, I'm Frances, she finally admitted. Who have you talked to? What do you know? Tricia spent the next few minutes telling Frances about the information she already had and the visits she had already made. Frances listened to every detail. Every now and again, she would ask questions. She was particularly interested in Tim and about the references made about Russell's men. I'm surprised the old fucker still has enough influence to have a following, Frances remarked when Quentin Russell was mentioned. I was under the impression that he was run out of the county back in the late 80s. I don't know about being run out of the county, but these days he's said to be living in a nursing home suffering from Alzheimer's. There may be someone using his name, which is more likely at this point. I'm going to run up to the nursing home where he's supposed to be staying and see for myself. A fitting end, if you ask me. He showed up here in New York one time, you know. He scared the crap out of me. He didn't see me, but he did find out I was here through one of my girls. He killed Mother, you know. Are you sure it was Quentin Russell? I saw it happen. The entire time Sheriff Ross was looking for her, he already knew she was dead, and I knew Sally knew that our turn was coming. Sheriff Ross already had his way with Sally, just like he had his way with my mother. If I hadn't run, he'd have had his way with me and sent me down to work in the streets across the river from Cincinnati. Are you positive it was Quentin Russell who came to your house and killed your mother? Tricia asked. I'm pretty sure. I didn't get too good a look at him, but I'm pretty sure it was him. There's a boy that was said to be with him. Yeah, I remember the kid. Not much older than us, but I remember the kid, Frances recalled. Did you manage to get a good look at him? Nah, everything was too much of a blur. Look, if you don't mind, I'd rather not talk about that day anymore. If my daddy is still alive, let him know I forgive him for leaving us the way that he did. I hated him at the time, but now I've had time to think about it. He did the best thing he could have ever done for us. I learned at an early age what most men wanted from a woman, Mrs. Michaels, Frances Brown continued. I learned that men would kill, lie, cheat, steal, and pay good money just to have a woman's favors. I also learned that men would buy and sell women to provide those services to other men. I was smart, Ms. Michaels. I learned to stay away from the men who would buy and sell women. I learned to use my own body for my own benefit. Well, I understand that you run a house yourself. Aren't you buying and selling girls? Tricia asked. Yes and no. I maintain a service. The girls working for me are of legal age and are willing participants. They're the ones who decide to go into the business. The girls who used to work the houses on the river were usually much younger. They were also there because they had to be there. People like Johnny Ross and Quentin Russell fed those houses with young girls as best as he could get them. They'd find a family hard up and loan them money. Not a lot, but enough for a family to scrape by just a little longer. Families would pledge their daughters as security. When the girls got old enough and started to develop, the sheriff would get alone with them, rape them, take pictures of them, and eventually have them sent away to the houses. Girls who went to the houses usually didn't come back. I take it he might have been taking pictures of Sally? Tricia asked. I watched them take pictures. Later, when she was in school, the pictures went around. The boys all called her a whore and a slut. They shamed her. They made her into a pariah. She nearly dropped out because of it. Earl took her in. They moved back to the family house in Possum Hollow right after graduation. They've been there ever since, as I've heard it. Tricia confirmed Sally Brown's whereabouts. That's good, Frances said. She would heard her emitting an audible sigh on her end of the phone. You've heard of the houses, right? I've heard stories, Tricia responded. My understanding is that there have been houses up and down the river almost since the river started carrying traffic. At one time, there were even floating bordellos, although they disappeared over a century ago, Frances confirmed. The houses which sprang up and down the river since have almost disappeared. There are just a few left on the Ohio side outside Louisville and Cincinnati. These days, the houses are more like I have here in New York. Sure, they're still streetwalkers, but most men prefer to be discreet about their encounters. Has the internet cut into your business? Tricia asked. Not really. If anything, the internet is up the demand, Frances laughed. Back when you were growing up, things were a lot different then. Mrs. Michaels, you have no idea. If the sheriff or an enforcer like Quentin never caught a girl and sent her to the houses, chances were that she would never come back again. I only knew one girl who came back. She told stories about the houses. Stories that scared me enough so that I knew I had to run. She warned me about my foster parents. They wanted me because they wanted the money they knew I'd be worth to them when I got old enough. I finally got to the point where I started running. Eventually, I had to hide almost all the time. Friends would take me in and no one would tell, especially if I tossed my legs open now and again to keep someone's brother or someone's father happy. I had a hell of a racket going. I found ways to be careful, and by the time I was 18, I had developed quite a talent. I took to the streets for a while before setting up a house of my own on the outskirts of the red light district in Cleveland. A few other girls joined me, and the next thing I knew, I had a steady income. I thought about getting a job at one of the nearby auto plants, but decided that I didn't want to take the cut in pay, Frances laughed. Frances finished giving Tricia her biography, and then started to get serious. I was going to tell you about the houses, she continued. Most of the girls who worked there ended up being nothing but shells by the time they were 21. Most didn't make it that far. The typical girl was thrown to the wolves at 14. The men in charge of the houses expected their girls to turn at least 3 tricks a day. A lot of times there was no time between tricks. Finish with one John, then bang, there is another at your door. Girls would come down with diseases. They're called STDs today. At the time, AIDS was unheard of. If you got something, you'd get sent to a clinic, get a shot, rest a day or two, then it was right back on your back. If you got pregnant, well, that was tough luck. There was 1 in 3 chance if you went to one of the clinics in Cincinnati, you'd never come back. The clinics were really back alley affairs, staffed by people who were barely doctors, if they were doctors at all. There was no escape either. Girls usually had no place to run. A few who looked like they escaped ended up being found dead somewhere downriver or in a patch of woods somewhere. The guys in charge would always make sure that the other girls knew what happened. That would scare them into not wanting to run. You told me about hearing stories from someone who actually had escaped, Tricia remarked. How did she manage it? Well, that would have been Twyla Martin. She went into the houses when she was 15. She caught on quick onto what was going on and managed to find a sympathetic John. He smuggled her out and kept her for a few months. She managed to kill him and found her way back to Fuller County. She ended up doing what I did, sleeping from house to house to survive. She eventually went back to open a house in St. Louis. I think she's still running the place. Joint like ours are going away. My business is losing ground to street whores looking for easy money to score drugs, or to the likes of the lot lizards who roam the parking lots at truck stops on the interstate. A quick buck for a fuck, if you'll pardon the expression. The girls who work that way are no better off than the girls who used to work the houses on the riverfront. Tricia mentioned the girls whose body had been found recently in Fuller County. Yeah, I heard about that from some people I know. It's a damn shame, really. Word is that if another body is found, the sheriff may as well kiss his chance for re-election goodbye. Has your source said anything about Russell's men coming back? Tricia asked. I don't think they ever left, Francis pointed out. Not all the girls went to the houses, you know. There was, and probably still is, a demand for young brides for older men. Something they could do without raising too many alarms. Faster horses, older whiskey, younger women, right? Exactly, Francis laughed. The older women who survived in this business are either running houses of their own or hiding as housewives of unsuspecting husbands. I was almost pulled into a trap set by Russell's men myself. Tricia was surprised to hear her own confession. You were warned off or rescued, right? Yeah. Tricia then told Francis about her flight from Jumpstart. Good for you, Francis exclaimed. From the sounds of it, you and I either know or have encountered some of the same people who are feeding me information about the situation in Fuller County today. Tricia was about to ask Francis who she may have been talking to when Francis resumed. Everything I've heard about you tells me you're one hell of a reporter. I know your next question, and I've got to tell you that I can't tell you at this time without getting people into trouble. The people you're looking for are out there, but they may not be doing what you think that they're doing. Be careful, be quick, be accurate. Once you found out the truth, let me know. Francis ended the phone call, leaving Tricia with more of an enigma than the one on which she started. Journey. Tricia just sat. She sensed that there was tremendous pain in the Brown family due to the disappearance of Jim and Nadine Brown back in 1967. Tim and Rose were the least touched by the tragedy due to their age at the time. They didn't seem to care other than to show just a little concern for their siblings. David and Evan were dead. Jim Jr. was in prison. Sally may as well have been in prison, and the only reason Frances even gave half a damn was that she realized that she was extremely lucky to have escaped a fate which would surely have killed her. Are you going to go sit there all night, or are you going to head home sometime in the foreseeable future? Glenn's voice cut through the fog created by Tricia's conversation with Frances. I'll be with you in a moment, she told him. I just need to find something, that's all. Tricia feigned looking for her tote bag until Glenn walked away toward the back stairs. She waited until he was in the stairwell before she went to the broadcast studios to seek out a weather report for the next few days. Hey, Tricia. Jerry Taylor had just finished introducing a record and had turned around to greet the guest in his studio. Jerry, what are you doing here so late? Mr. Radio called in, Jerry explained. I think the kid got himself a hot date and decided he'd rather get laid than go to work. Sometimes I think that's what all men think about, Tricia sighed. We think about hunting and drinking, too, you know, he defended himself. Trains, pickup trucks, and mama figure in there, too. Don't forget dogs, she added. And Glenn says you've been working on a big story, he said to change the subject. Is that why you're working so late yourself? Tricia glanced at the clock. It was 6:45. I've been at this story for 2 weeks now, she replied. I'm almost to the point where I'm thinking of just giving up. Do you have the latest long-term weather forecast handy? Sure thing, Jerry told her. He reached over to his right and swung a computer monitor in her direction. He caressed the keyboard and a readout with a weather map appeared on the screen. Looks like we got a stretch of cold and blustery, he remarked as the readout appeared. Good thing I looked. I was thinking about taking a trip up Columbus with the missus to do some shopping here in the next few days. Suppose we can hold off for another day or two. She thanked him, then pushed the monitor back in his direction. She left just before Jerry had to go into a live commercial. After picking up her coat from Glenn's office, Tricia headed down the back stairway to get to her car. She called Glenn and volunteered to pick up a pizza from Father Linguini's on her way home. Half an hour later, Tricia was driving through Prentice when she felt that she was being watched. She glanced to her left when she pulled up to a stoplight to see a man in a pickup truck turn his head away from her. From her brief glimpse, she thought the face looked familiar. She'd seen him before. She couldn't quite place him, but she was sure that he had seen him. The man was forgotten just about the time she hit a driveway. Just someone else headed up the road wanting to get home, she thought. Glenn had the table set and the drinks poured when she arrived. They talked about how their days went and a few other trivial matters before Tricia took a deep breath to inform him of a decision. "I need to make a trip," she announced. "I've already made tentative arrangements to see Jim Brown Jr. up at Lebanon, and then there's the matter of Quentin Russell. I'd like to see him. Sheriff Roy thinks he has Alzheimer's and has no interest in anything which may have happened here back in the 60s. I just want to be certain." "Is this just going to be a day trip?" Glenn asked. "Maybe," she told him. "I might need to take several days. One thing might lead to another." "What do you think you're going to find?" "I don't know. May find nothing. On the other hand, I might find Jim Brown Sr. Frances, the middle daughter, thinks that there's a possibility he may still be alive." "You talk with Frances?" "Just before you left the radio station to come home," Tricia told him, "I found out that she's a high-class madam running a call girl service out of New York City." "Well, son of a gun," Glenn remarked. "From what I gathered from our conversation, Sheriff Ross and Quentin Russell have been involved in a white slavery ring. They went around the immediate area to procure young girls to entertain men at the whorehouses in Kentucky." "They tried to recruit Sally, I take it," Glenn said. "Now, Sally may have been pledged to go to work in the houses by her father," Tricia continued. "If her mother had other ideas and tried to prevent it, it would explain the accounts we've heard of her being murdered on her doorsteps. Frances said that she saw someone, most likely Quentin Russell, kill Nadine on the morning she and her husband disappeared. I believe that Jim Brown ran to avoid Sheriff Ross so the children could be placed in the county home where they would be protected." "You told me that he most likely sold his daughter? Why would he change his mind and try to protect her?" That's a question I'd like to answer. I'd like to ask the man myself." Glenn took a deep breath and let out a low whistle. "Whew. You think a senior Jim Brown is still alive?" he asked. "It's a possibility," she answered. "I'd like to find out." "From what you were telling me earlier, I don't blame you one bit." They laughed and held on to each other for a long while before getting back to business again. "There's something which intrigues me," he told her after reviewing her notes. "These Russell's men, as you call them, virtually disappeared at about the same time as Zeke came up here to set up and run his radio station. The current problems date from about that time I came up here from Texas to take Zeke's place. Could there be a connection?" Tricia furrowed her brow for a moment. "The idea merits consideration," she told him. "Jessica seemed to think so. I'll run it by Roy and see what he says before I head up to Lebanon to visit Jim Brown Jr. By the way, something happened while I was on the way back home this evening. I thought for some reason I was being watched. When I stopped at the second traffic light going through Prentice, I saw someone I knew driving a truck next to me." "It probably isn't important," Glenn tried to reassure her. "I get the feeling I'm being watched all the time." "Well, this is spookier. From the quick glance that I got, I'm sure that I'd seen the man in the pickup truck somewhere else." "If these Russell's men are active again, you'll need to watch your back," Glenn told her. "Just be careful, you hear?" "You too," she smiled. The next morning, Glenn left for the radio station as usual in the pre-dawn darkness at around 5:30. Tricia stayed up for a second cup of coffee before gathering several days' worth of clothing to pack into a suitcase. She also packed a second voice recorder and some extra pads of yellow legal paper into her oversized tote. She thought they might come in handy. She went on down to Magnolia to see Glenn for a few minutes before going up to his office to make a few phone calls. Coming in from the back of Zeke's Cafe, she noted that the usual morning assembly of farmers and townsfolks were watching Glenn interviewing Hoke. There's the connection. Tricia suddenly realized it was Hoke who was in the car next to hers as she was driving home on Friday evening. She broke into a broad smile and approached her husband and his guest on the platform in the front window. "It's good to see you, Miss Patricia," Hoke spoke up when she arrived. "Glenn told me that you were off to see some people this week, and I was afraid that I was going to miss you." Almost instantly, any concerns that Tricia had about her upcoming trip were allayed by his voice. Hoke and Glenn involved her in a three-way conversation, centering on a dance coming up the next day in Hillsboro. When the conversation finished, it was well past 9:30. Tricia went upstairs to make final arrangements to see Jim Jr. in Lebanon. "When do you expect to be back?" Glenn asked, passing her as she was on her way out the door. "My appointment to visit Jim Jr. is at noon," she replied. "Maybe I can meet you up there for dinner at the Golden Lamb," he suggested. "I'd like that, but I'm returning by way of Hillsboro to see if I can see and confirm the identity of Quentin Russell at the nursing home. I anticipate getting home no later than dinner time. If not, I'll give you a call." "Well, if you must stay overnight, I could join you tomorrow after the show," he suggested. "That'll give us an excuse to do the dance with Hoke." "Well, that sounds great," she exclaimed. "It'll give me a chance to do something about those two left feet you keep saying you have." Tricia paused just long enough to give her husband a long, soulful kiss. It wasn't until she was halfway to the county line that she realized that she might be making herself vulnerable. If something was watching her or someone was watching her, they could take advantage of her while she was on the road. "Be careful," she told herself, pushing down on her accelerator pedal. "Just be careful."